Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles, and investment ideas from Tom, me, and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters. Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, has the fire movement run out of fuel? And if it has, is it time for a replacement chill philosophy? If none of that makes sense to you, do not worry. All will be explained in this week's episode. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Many of us would love to give up the day job and retire early, but the FIRE movement takes things to the extreme. FIRE is an acronym and it stands for Financial Independence to Retire Early. It's the philosophy that you can save very aggressively in your working life to build a retirement fund big enough to pay you a passive income that you can live from, and allowing you to retire decades earlier than most orthodox financial plans would permit. But have acolytes of FIRE got it all wrong? Is the dream they chase a mirage, not only financially, but in terms of their happiness as well? Would they not be better off moderating their plans and pursuing a path to chill? That's another acronym, and it means career happiness inspires longer lives. To discuss all of this and explain all those acronyms, I'm joined by Andrew Oxlade, my colleague here at Fidelity and the inventor of the CHILL acronym. Andrew, welcome along.
That makes it sound very grand, doesn't it? The inventor of chill.
It is grand. It is grand. We're putting this on a pedestal.
You're making me nervous, Ed. Carry on.
So we've got fire and chill, and we're going to explain all of this. There's loads to copy, loads to cover in this topic. I love this topic, actually.
Yeah.
We've covered fire a couple of times on the podcast before. This is a very interesting new take on it. And for me, this is the intersection of saving and investing, but it really gets to why we do that, right? It actually makes people think about that. We'll get to chill, mm-hmm. which is your invention, as I've said, but let's start with fire because that's where this begins. What is it and why do you think it came about?
So, I mean, what I would say, I'm not saying this is some sort of binary choice. I'm saying fire grew up as a very worthy and notable thing that a lot of people follow, and I think that's great. And my argument in all of this is that it can be taken to extremes, and when it's taken to extremes, that's when it can have a negative impact on people.
Yes.
In terms of their mental health and how they're approaching their whole finance.
Yeah.
So this whole thing started in 2007, 2008, off the back of the last financial crisis. Mm-hmm. I think people were feeling sort of kind of disaffected with what working lives and sort of the bigger, broader capitalist thing was doing for them, and wanted to take charge. They want to basically get out of the rat race and do it as soon as possible. So they would save anything up to 70% of income. I mean, some more, but that was the aspiration, to save 70% of income, put it away, invest wisely, and then retire younger. And the internet, it's a very broad thing, isn't it? The internet. The internet is full of these sort of stories. Reddit in particular is an area where there's a lots of fire followers and will gather and talk about
this. It skews younger, doesn't it? It skews younger people.
Yeah, so we're talking about, I mean, it really prompted me thinking was when I saw there was a weekend in the national press here where the Times had talked to somebody who had retired at 42, had been in investment banking, saved lots of money, raised £1 million by 42, and then managed to make that last. He was now something like, I can't remember, his sort of late 50s, I think.
Yeah.
And it had worked for him. And you kind of think, well, this, it does work for some people and it does make sense. But not for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we're going to get onto this. I mean, those years that it sprang up, financial crisis was part of it.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, actually, the real growth, because this is in the piece I wrote for our website and for This Is Money, you can see the growth has actually come very much in the last few years. You know, it's a kind of, there's definitely a COVID effect has made people stop and think about their lives and what they're doing and
In terms of the popularity of it.
Yeah, because I just looked at the Google Trends data to see how many people were searching for fire in that context.
Yeah.
And comparing it as well with the US, or certainly the global figure was much lower in the growth. So the UK is very much at the vanguard of this. years, probably a little bit of catch up because this thing started in the US and really got traction there, and then it sort of spread out from there.
And do you think there's part of it, you know, is a sort of loss of faith in, you know, the idea of employers, actually, that employers will look after you, you'll have jobs for life? I mean, that's a concept that probably ended a long time ago, but people don't want to be reliant on an employer for their entire livelihood, do they? They want that independence, which is in
the who knows how these things manifest and take charge. But there's also that other element of people are much more aware of taking control themselves because they have to. You know, we've moved from a generation where our parents were very much kind of final salary and you didn't have to worry about any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So now people have become more engaged and engaged in this stuff. Great. And we definitely need that because there's too many people who don't. But this cohort particularly have taken it to the extreme.
Yeah. And you know, the appeal is obvious or potentially obvious for people, but there's some real challenges to achieving these FIRE goals, I would say. Financially speaking, at least, you're reliant on financial markets. Even if you, the saving part of this is really extreme, isn't it? 70% of salary is most people are going to say, you know, that's impossible.
Yeah.
But even if you do that, you're still reliant on financial markets to build your pot in the future and for it to be sustainable. Inflation, you're reliant on that staying at a reasonable level. 2008, you know, it was at a reasonable level, and it has been for a long time, for long periods since then, but the last few years, not so. You can't survive on a FIRE strategy, can't survive at 10% inflation, I would say. Rising housing costs, you've got to live somewhere. All these represent basically risks to FIRE plans. But there's another big one, isn't there? A very long-term one. And that's the fact that we're all living longer and you're going to have to pay for your whole life. And that might be 85, 90, 95 or 100 years long. That's another big threat, isn't it, to the FIRE strategy?
Well, we've talked about this before on here, haven't we? And certainly on our website of around the 100-year life, which I think just, you know, is an important thing for us all to think about. How long are we going to live and how are you going to fund that? And that's what struck me around the, you know, that example before of the 42-year-old who had £1 million. Is that going to last him and his family until he's 90, which is a realistic age that he might live to now? And so that can throw all these plans a little bit into doubt as to how you do that. I mean, I'm 50 and I've written about this on the site of my plan of what I want to do. And I've got a 1 in 4 chance of living to 93, according to the ONS calculator on your death day, as I put it, or 1 in 10 chance I'll get it to 97. Now, those are kind of, you know, outside chances, but they're not impossible.
Yeah.
And I'm expected to live to 83, 84. So I need to work out how I'm going to fund all that. And I think there's some interesting stuff. There was a 100-year life book that was around 5-6 years ago, and it sort of set out a lot of this kind of thinking of just changing the way you're operating your life, not so that it's the, you know, the education, work, retire. That's the old pattern that we've always followed. The suggestion there is that the 100-year life will necessitate a different approach. And a different approach could be that you save and plan in a way that gives you options to do other things. Things like you may want to change career in your 40s because then you find a career that you really love and can see that through to its 70s. I mean, the art of all of this, if you find something that you really love, you can carry on working, and that doesn't need to be full time. And it doesn't need to be the most amazing, colourful career. Careers can appeal in different ways. And there's lots of things that people from all sorts of walks of life can turn their hand to that they would enjoy more than the thing that they found themselves doing. If you can do that and work part-time to your 75, then that will completely change the dynamic of how much you need to save for retirement.
Exactly. And I think one of the big challenges with this is that people have a very, very negative idea about working into later life. You see this all the time. I mean, the government is raising the state pension age all the time. People are being told they're going to have to work longer. And normally the main response to that is horror and, oh my God, I can't be working full time at 65, 75, whatever. And let's face it, you know, some people have, you know, jobs, physical jobs. It's just not going to be possible to do that. But it should, as you say, there's other types of work. You know, if you were told, well, you don't have to work full time, you can work part time, half the hours. You don't have to commute anywhere. Everywhere you work, you know, if you whatever you do, it's going to be, you know, a 10-minute walk from your house. You know, you're going to be able to have flexible time. All these things suddenly make it more palatable, don't they?
Yeah.
And more sort of possible from a sort of you know, the imagination you need to do it.
And you can see that in the way employers are changing, the way they operate. They're very focused on what gets called the value proposition for employees. Mm. And this means just basically offering the best thing. It's not just about salary. It's about flexibility. It's about making things possible for people to have the right work-life balance. Mm. So that can be part-time working, or it can be, you know, all sorts of ways of, you know, working from home or whatever it might be. And also government policy is moving that way. You can see that in countries around the world where they're making it easier to work later, because everybody knows that's the elephant in the room, that we need people to work longer to make all of this affordable.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm saying from all of this is because it's glib and easy to say that, isn't it? And what you're saying is that there's some tough jobs where maybe you don't want to do it, or it doesn't transfer. And that's probably going to be the case. My thing is born out of looking at people who I see around me who I might call this kind of financial dysmorphia, which is a phrase that sort of sprung up in the US where people have the wrong perception of their financial situation. And they're actually then, you know, going hell for leather to save as much as they possibly can, suffering their lifestyle, suffering in the meantime. And they're probably their happiness, you know, they get so absorbed, and their health, yeah, certainly their mental health, are becoming so absorbed. There's a lot of things, it's really challenging, money and financial and mental health, because it's not just, you know, there's the obvious, if you don't have enough money, life is very tough, but this dysmorphia can be the other way around. It can be that you've got too much and you don't know that, you know, you're oversaved, and yet you're still beating yourself up. And also the same thing you have to face if you're going to be a stock market investor, that you need to, again, you need to hold it light. You need to be objective about the fact that it may fall at, you know, at certain periods, but the data suggests that over the very long term, it will give you a, you know, higher return than some other assets, and certainly more than savings accounts, for example. So it's just having really, if it's summing up, it is just hold things, don't hold things so tightly, of trying to be like, I must do this by this point because this is my goal to do it.
Yeah.
If it's going to have an impact on your mental health. If it doesn't, great, you know, go for it. And if you feel like you're going to be much happier. And of course, when I publish this online, there's been a lot of comments on This Is Money. There's been a lot of comments on Reddit and LinkedIn as well. And you get that mix of comments of people who were very, very satisfied that they've done that. You know, I retired at 52, best thing I ever did, you know, da, da, da.
Yes.
I choose what I want to do. And that's great if people can do that. I'm going to say that the evidence is that people who work longer generally are happier, and certainly their brain is more engaged, and therefore their health stays for longer. Hence the chill, the longer life piece of, if you're working, you're probably going to be more active. You're probably going to have your brain engaged more, and that's probably a positive thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had conversations with, you know, the people in my life, family and parents, my parents in particular, and speaking to them, well, they're looking back to when they were sort of, you know, both retired in their mid-60s. The years before, immediately before they retired, they just wanted to stop work. They just couldn't wait to stop and be done with it. But the time comes, suddenly they have all this time on their hands. You know, you have a week or two off and actually your energy comes back a little bit. And they're both very active, certainly physically and mentally, for a few years after that sort of official retirement date, and have both busied themselves doing sort of quasi work anyway, you know, and lots of voluntary stuff and third sector and, you know, citizens' advice and school governors and all this sort of stuff that they've done in their early retirement that they could have been paid for and they've got the energy for. And actually, I think they're very keenly aware of what you say, which is that being mentally inactive, that is what's really aging. You know, if you don't have something to occupy you and keep you busy, right?
I mean, it's... And I'm sure the FIRE crew would argue, and rightly so, that gives them the choice to do that because they've got their financial independence. They can choose then to do which work they
want
on a voluntary basis.
That's true.
And again, that's absolutely fine. You know, that's brilliant that they've gotten that position and been able to achieve that. I guess it's just not going in a blinkered way of like work bad, must stop as soon as possible.
Yeah, well,
the end.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we are edging closer and closer to your idea and your acronym, which was CHILL, C-H-I-L-L. It's a modification of the FIRE thinking, isn't it? Or a sort of alternative. What does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, everything we've just talked about, it's the career happiness that can hopefully lead to longer life, as in a longer and more enjoyable life. because you're still engaged. And it's the point around, I mean, it's interesting actually, because looking at the amount of positive comments I had on LinkedIn, admittedly, that's obviously a platform for people who like work, enjoy work, and are very engaged in their work. But it was overwhelmingly supportive of that notion.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole point of this is that career, it's career planning to give you career happiness. It's thinking about from an early age, if you can, but it's, you know, as ever with these things, it's never too late for you to try and retrain your skill. You've given yourself more options if you've thought about it before. So what I would say, and we, of course, in our team, we had this discussion with our colleague Nafisa Zaman, who had also wrote a piece on the 100-year life. And she looked at that and about how, you know, she might work her career versus how she'd been thinking about it before. And giving yourselves optionality, thinking about where you're saving. Because, of course, the best tax-efficient way to save is into a pension for your long-term you know, in terms of pension saving, because that's the most tax efficient way to do it. But there is the option to save in an ISA, which will give you more flexibility and more access. So just having a think about those things. And maybe if you do have a financial advisor or will think about having a financial advisor, definitely worth having those conversations. Give yourself optionality. If you're able to then draw on that money when you're 40, because you want a career break, because a career break alone, you know, if you can take 2 or 3 years out, that might just give you the longevity to carry on going and working, even in the same career. Or it might be that you want to go and totally reskill, new degree, I don't know, anything like that. That if you've got those options by having thought about that from before, then that's a more positive way to look at it.
Absolutely. And I mean, this framing, this chill frame, I love that framing, because it just strikes me as being far more applicable to people's actual real lives. And it also maps onto the real policy problem that we have as a government, as a Western world, you could say. You know, we are an aging society. We have not saved enough for retirement. We are living longer, and this is a way to address all those things, and in a way which is not sort of soul crushing and just telling people bad messages about, you know, tough, you won't have enough money, you've got to live longer. We have this challenge as an industry, don't we, all the time, because we're encouraging people to save, not just because we're in the business of that, but because they're going to need to do it. And the sort of perhaps the traditional way of doing it is to say, look, you know, you've got to save absolutely loads, otherwise you're not going to, you know, be living in poverty in retirement, and it's all very scary. We need to change that, don't we? We need to be more inspirational about those years where, working longer is going to hugely benefit your long-term financial planning and goals, but it needn't be a terrible life sentence, right? You can
exactly. This is kind of the missing leg of the stool, isn't it, at the moment? Of, you know, get saving. Yes, very positive message. Everyone needs to do that and plan better for their retirement and when they're going to do, and think carefully about when that might be. But it is this career aspect of working longer that doesn't get talked about enough. So I just hope that will do more. So, I mean, maybe we'll see more of it in the election. That would be great, wouldn't it? In
terms of
the run in there and policies. Over,
don't hold your breath.
Over how can the government help us more? How can the rules be adapted to help us more? You know, I mean, they changed the law a number of years ago that meant that you can't force people to stop working at a certain age, which was the case before. We've got the rising state pension age, which for me and you will be 68, I think. It's subject to being confirmed that, because they're still looking at it. And again, that will be something that comes up around the election and afterwards. But the elephant in the room is you will be working longer. There's no kind of getting away from that for most people, and therefore embrace it and find the thing that's going to work for you to make you able to do that. I mean, my dad's another example, sort of talking about the generation. He left his sort of London commuting job at age 50, he worked in the civil service, and then got a local job, and he did that for 20 years working in a test centre in
so he's the prototype.
So, well, maybe he sort of helped sow the thought. And I think, you know, I mean, that's not uncommon now. He actually worked till he was 74, I think it was, in the end.
Yeah.
And then he retired. Yes, but 2 or 3 years ago, he retired and enjoyed that, because he wasn't commuting. So it wasn't as arduous as, and it was getting out and it was meeting people and it was talking and it was, you know, he was a manager and he was able to enjoy doing that. And I think there'll be lots of people in that example. I'm not saying this is right for everyone, but it's just a moment to stop and think.
Yeah. And let's just end then, Andrew, with some of the sort of practical points here, because whether you're looking at chill or fire, however you want to organize your life, there is some crossover in what you're going to need to do. Clearly, saving in general is a good idea. Saving earlier rather than later. And planning, maybe even getting professional help with your planning. All those things are going to improve your chances, whichever route you want to take.
I mean, no better place to start than the, you know, the calculators on our site. Or there's lots of calculators out there that you play around with that and show how much earlier, you know, by saving earlier, how much impact that has is quite inspirational. So I think people who are able to do that, if you can save earlier, it has a massive compounding effect over time, and you'll be able to accrue much more money, give yourself far more options. And then just thinking about that dynamic of where you're putting it to make sure you have got some
where you're putting it and where you want to take it from in the future. ISAs, pensions, drawdown, annuities, these are all, even if you're not familiar with them now, these are all sort of potential sources of income, and it's going to be about blending those in ways that suit you through your retirement.
Exactly. And if you're supplementing that with some work, that's another thing to think about, how that would, you know, it's the sort of tax impact of how you're accruing money. But again, good advisor will be very useful in helping navigate that.
Okay, well, we've covered absolutely loads there, Andrew. Thanks so much for coming in. That is all the time we have. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities, and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances, and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an